If you want my loving, if you really do.
Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos. You are listening to episode number 135 of the Mile High Show. All the info and links to our back catalog of archives is available at milehighshow.com. Please check it out. And if you'll notice, there is a link right at the bottom of the page for Amazon. It is an Amazon link that lets Amazon know you got to them to do all your online shopping through the Mile High Show. And Amazon gives us a little thank you every month for sending you their way. Please use that, and one of the things you can use that for is to pick up a copy of our guest's CD, Miss Candace Devine, and her release, Believe, and Baby, I Love You, the intro song that you just heard, and I think you'll hear a little bit more as I'm coming out of this. I'm not sure. I don't know how I throw this thing together, but Candace Devine and her CD, Believe, is available through Amazon by using that milehighshow.com link. Please do that. And while you're doing that, listen to my conversation with Candace. Very interesting lady. I had met her for the first time while we recorded this, and we recorded it outdoors at the picnic tables at Pepper Jack's Burgers in Chino Valley, a great spot to grab a bite to eat and enjoy the northern Arizona sun. Pepper Jack's, there's a link for their Facebook page in the show notes, but they're located at 865 North Highway 89 in Chino Valley. Stop by, grab a burger, and tell the folks there that you are there because of the Mile High Show and for good burgers. But anyway, Candace and I sat out there in the sunshine and talked. I learned about her history, what brought her from her Southern Cal Hollywood roots to Northern Arizona, the family connection that her name has with the Andy Devine up there on Route 66 in Kingman. Most of you, I'm sure, know of that boulevard and the millions of travelers from around the world that visit Route 66 in the great wild, wild west. I'm sure know that Andy Devine name. Let's find out about that and her link to that. She's a Grammy-nominated artist who has performed with some of the biggest and most powerful names in pop music over the years. We hear about that, her touring, her inspirations, all kinds of great stuff. One of the main reasons we sat down to talk was so that she could promote her upcoming June 3rd, 2017 benefit show for the, let me pull it up here, I'll get it right, the Chino Valley Equestrian Park benefit at the Elks Theater on June 3rd. There are links to that in our show notes, but it's basically go to PrescottElksTheater.com. Check out the event page on Facebook as well. Buy your tickets and go, because this Chino Valley Equestrian Park is a great, great addition to the equestrian community here in Chino Valley. It's going to be one of the premier facilities, multi-use parks in the Southwest, and they are putting that together, and a grand opening for that is coming up in June as well. But June 3rd, Prescott Elks Theater, Candace Devine raising money for the Equine Park. Listen to it, listen to the show, have a great time. I know I did, meeting with my new friend, Miss Candace Devine. So check out her show June 3rd at the Elks. Pick up her CD, Believe, which features the track that you heard on the intro here, Baby, I Love You. You can get that through the Mile High Show link to Amazon right there at milehighshow.com. Buy it on Amazon. Let us get a little thank you from Amazon to help support the show. And our outro music today will be by her previous project, David Devine, and that is It's All Right, a powerful tune. She's got such a dynamic voice, and it really matches her personality. She is it was a joy to speak with, and I look forward to talking with her more in the future and seeing her perform in and around our area. Now, it turns out, and we mentioned this very quickly in the tail end of this interview, this conversation, I have a bit of a connection with her, and I didn't even really realize it until after we set up this interview. DJ, who is a acquaintance of mine, very fun guy, but he's a good friend of mine and a good friend of the show, Mr. Matt Hinshaw, who is the photographer for the Bergamini Group of Realtors, and Candace's husband DJ is a realtor with that group. So we'll give them a quick little plug. Bergamini Group, it is bradbergamini.com. And also everythingprescott.com, the Bergamini Group, right there on Gurley Street in Prescott. My good friend Matt Hinshaw does their marketing and their social media and all their photography for selling and buying homes in the Prescott area. I sat down with DJ to record an impromptu podcast at Far From Folsom a couple of months ago, and it didn't air. And you'll hear why a little bit. But I had a guest fall out, ended up releasing a solo show. But because the guest fell out, I was already there at the location, and the Bergamini Group folks were there along with my buddy Matt, just hanging out and having a good time. And I got to chatting with DJ and said, hey, I got my stuff here. Let's record a podcast. And we almost did. It was a lot of fun. Unairable, but a lot of fun. Anyway, that's enough of that. Again, Candace Devine, her Facebook page is Candace Devine Music. Check her out, and please, June 3rd, Elks Theater, benefit for the Chino Valley Equestrian Park. Here is my conversation with the lovely and talented Miss Candace Devine. Find you. Let's get that out of the way first. Your Twitter, Facebook,
all of that stuff is under Candace Devine. And the only thing that's tricky about that is spelling my name correctly. I'm Candace with two A's, not an I, and I'm Devine with an E and not an I. So less I's and more other vowels, and you'll find me.
Now, I sit down and I interview musicians pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. I have gotten into the very bad habit of having somebody with me, a couple of former guests, local musicians, who are kind of the unofficial guest hosts and sidekicks. Les Lyman and Sky Conwell sit in with me quite a bit. Yeah. Paul Morris has as well. Local in the Prescott and Verde music scene, they're staples. They play all over the place. Yeah. And the reason I do that is because music, I love music. I'm a music fan.
Yeah.
But I know nothing about music.
I think being a fan is the most important part, well, honestly. It's how it makes you feel, more so than what it's doing.
My music knowledge is very stunted because it goes through... I'm the youngest of five kids.
Oh, your mother's a saint.
Yeah, there was six.
Yeah.
Six kids, 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I'm the youngest. My sister, who lives up the highway here in Paulden, is the oldest. We're almost exactly 7 years apart. Six kids in 7 years.
Your mother is a saint. And if she's listening, tell her props. I send mad props for all her lady parts.
I think we broke them all.
Yeah.
So I got my musical tastes from the older kids in the neighborhood, my brothers and sisters. So it's kind of an eclectic mix. You know,
right.
I grew up listening to the Osmonds, Donnie and Marie.
I still listen to Donnie and Marie.
And then my older brother, who normally you get to rely on for those deep cuts.
Right, right.
He loved disco.
I love disco. I can't put down disco. I love disco.
So my musical taste started with my older siblings. And then when I was in high school in the late 70s, early 80s, I was listening to the Stones, the classic rock, which wasn't even called classic rock then.
No, it was just rock and roll.
When all my friends were listening to the current stuff at the time, which was a lot of new wave.
New wave bands.
Yeah, so I got that mix going, and then I got a job. And I worked.
Takes you out of the game, doesn't it? Darn those jobs.
I've worked at least two full-time jobs since the early 80s. And then nothing about pop music, television, pop culture. There's this void until like the late 90s. So I've got this whole black hole of non-knowledge of music. So I rely on these guys to kind of walk me through.
Fill in the parts,
You know, fill in the blanks and stuff. What were your musical influences growing up?
You know, it's so...
Did you grow up?
I was born and raised in Burbank, California, fifth generation. My great-grandparents moved there and built one of the first stables there, horse stables. They provided all the horses for the Westerns, originally for silent films and then into talking pictures. Yeah. And they were all the original stuntmen and women of you know, the silver screen. And so they were with Walt Disney and everybody. I don't know. My grandmother was the stand-in for little Shirley Temple and Maureen O'Hara, and they all worked. So I ran deep in the Burbank scene because they had their stable that was there. I think my grandparents sold it a year before I was born, and it's still there. But we have some roots in Arizona, too, because my great-uncle's Andy Devine. So if you go through Kingman and you see Andy Devine Way...
Isn't the airport.
Right, the airport's there, yeah. Okay. So I grew up there, and my influences have been kind of like your experience. They've been extremely varied. My dad grew up in Pennsylvania in, the 50s, 40s, 50s, and he grew up with big band, American Songbook, swing... a lot of Frank Sinatra, a lot of Judy Garland, a lot of Johnny Mathis and Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin, all of that era, at Rat Pack, you know. And my mom is about 9 years younger, and she grew up with a lot of, you know, Cat Stevens and, Linda Ronstadt and all of that. So I have this huge melting mixture of American Songbook and 70s singer-songwriter. But then...
No, we're good.
We got good drinks. Thank you. We're at Pepper Jack's having a good lunch. If you hear me, chewing and burping, I apologize.
Crispy fries. You talk, I'll chew.
So anyway, I had this very, mixed bag of stuff. And then as you grow up, Carly Simon, Carole King, James Taylor, I really was drawn toward the storytelling of the singer-songwriter era of the 70s, even though I was an, 80s, 90s kid.
Yeah.
So I grew up with, I had all of that, I had all those 80s, pop stuff going on. I loved Madonna. I worshipped, Whitney Houston. She's still to this day, even though she's long gone, is, my favorite voice. But I had all of these, American Songbook, and I had musical theater, and I had a lot of 70s singer-songwriter. And then I discovered soul music in Motown. We listened to the oldies station, and so then all of a sudden you hear Ray Charles, and you're hearing Aretha Franklin, and you're hearing all of these other... influences, and I think my music tends to be a combination of all of that. One genre I missed my hole, which I'm catching up on over the last probably 10 years, was a lot of country music.
Yeah,
and mainly because in Southern California, we weren't near the beach; we were inland. But you have the Southern sunny California beach vibe. Everything's kind of feel good pop music, and
West
you have a
Coast
little
pop,
and you have a little less of that. Like, my heart's broken, and I'm out in the feet. I'm taking care of my lady. There's just less of it. So until country music turned a little more pop and started to cross over. But as I've gotten older and I collect records and I've definitely found a true fondness for, in my heart, older country music.
Yeah.
Like I am that Dolly Parton, Loretta Lynn, Johnny Cash, old Willie Nelson. And that's not to take anything away from the modern contemporary country music. I love the storytelling is what gets me.
Yeah.
That's where the heart of all the music I love comes from. A well turned phrase, a good lyric, and beautiful melodies. So
yeah, I'm the same. I love the story aspect of a great song, excuse me. I was the only kid in eighth grade listening to Tom Waits. The
yeah.
Years.
Oh, yeah.
I love those songs.
Yeah.
I kind of, long before the advent of you know, MTV and music videos and all that, I remember listening to songs. You'd put the headphones on and let the whole album play.
Yeah.
And you make that little movie up in your head
right.
of what this song means. And I remember for some reason, you know, Piano Man, Billy Joel was one that I used to listen to.
That's another one I love.
When
yeah.
I was a kid, you know, yeah. I was a weird kid. And
I think you were a kid with good taste, is what it sounds like.
I got that one from my sister, stole it from her.
Yeah.
But listening to those songs, especially with the lights out, headphones on, yeah. and imagining what that whole album meant.
Right.
And then being disillusioned when I'm reading years later, or you Google something on the internet. Right. And you find out that it's nowhere near what was going on in your own head.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the funny part. When you get to the background of a lot of these songs and what was happening in the world. Yeah, yeah, everything's a very different picture.
I like my story
like,
much
my
better a lot
cooler.
Of
times. Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that is, and I think I'm in my 30s, I'm at the tail end of that. When I was a kid, you still listened to a full, it was on CD. CDs were the new, you know, it was all CD, but you still bought an album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know it's so funny to me how the music industry, the industry itself has changed, but the pendulum of the style of not of music, but of the way they release it has changed. We've gone kind of back to the beginning with just singles.
Yeah, 45s.
Yeah.
Way back in
and
the 50s.
But now it's a download, you know, yeah. for 99 cents. And it's more often than not, I think most people don't listen to a full album unless they somehow complete their download for, you know, $7.99 or something. But I find that most people are single driven now.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing. I think that pendulum will swing again. And now that reprints of big LPs are coming back and vinyl's coming back in yeah. such a large way, I think artists are starting to look at a full picture again. Part of what I love, you know, I tell this to other artists and people I've recorded with all the time is I loved that there was like this beautiful, you know, if you listen to a Fleetwood Mac record or if you listen to an old Elton John record or anything, there's this beautiful, like, arc to an album. You know
arc,
what I mean? There's
yeah.
a whole story arc. And of course, there's B-sides, the songs that maybe they didn't feel or the label didn't feel were the strongest. But some of my favorite songs are on B-sides, you know, because
yeah.
you get these really intimate versions of these artists. So I think it's starting to come back. I think artists are starting to find that, like, maybe I need to do, you know, 10 songs of quality or do an EP of 5 quality songs
yeah.
and then release more as I
now,
get there.
Since you see the way that releases are kind of geared towards a single out, when you perform live, do you build your live show around that story arc at all, or do you try and do it? Is there a rhythm that
yeah,
you set
I, it up the, to me, a live show, the rhythm and pacing of songs are incredibly important. I don't like to have too many ballads back to back. I don't like too many fast songs. I think it's really important. I always try to put a very cognizant effort into giving the audience a journey
yeah.
in whatever capacity that is, whether it's, you know, content of what these songs are about, whether it's the rhythm and feel of them. I want people to take a ride with me for sure. And as a performer, I mean, it's my own energy too. It's like if I'm singing it, you know, bump, 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 bump the whole time, then I'm a sweating puddle and all the cute, you know, as Dolly Parton says, the polish and paint make a girl what she ain't. All of that comes sweating off. So you got to pace yourself, you know. But yeah, I think it's really important to give an arc and an ebb and a flow and a journey for the audience when you're performing. You know, they need to be able to breathe with you and pump up with you and take a second with you and all that.
Tell me a little bit about that performing aspect. When did you yeah. start performing as a... Were you the kid putting on the show for your parents?
Always.
Or?
I was the kid that begged to be on Star Search. I was the kid that begged to be on any, you know, possible outlet that would allow me to be heard. And my parents at the time were in entertainment and they were like, over our dead body. They were like, go be a lawyer, go be a teacher, go be a doctor. You're a smart kid. Don't waste your brain on the entertainment business. And of course, when your parents are like, that's the one thing they don't want you to do. That's the one thing you're like, I'm made for this. You know? I was born to do this. And they're like, ugh. No, I was the kid that my dad has videos of me from like 3, 4, 5. You know, I forgot show and tell in kindergarten. And I sang Old Man River, which was an old like You know, I mean, what 5-year-old sings Old Man River? Anybody listening to this is going to be like, what the hell song
Google
is that?
It.
Google it. It's from Showboat. It's about the South. I mean, it's slavery. I don't, you know, who sings that? This 5-year-old did.
That's a kid in Burbank,
no,
I guess.
No,
huh?
But, you know, I had only heard, I had heard the Judy Garland version, and I was enamored with her big voice. I have a very big voice, and I'm positive it's because I was drawn to big singers as a little kid. I loved Judy Garland. I loved Liza Minnelli. I loved Barbara Streisand. I loved Whitney Houston. I loved anybody who could sing, you know, like really just let it out and sing and feel it. So, you know, I always emulated big singers.
Nice.
And I came out a big singer.
What was music and singing, was that always your goal? Did you ever, or have you done any acting?
Yeah,
or?
I went to college as a theater major and voice, and I studied acting and did drama school and had some day parts and TV, you know, little things here and there. The thing that was always hard for me with acting, I loved the craft of it. People always talk about, you know your craft, and I loved doing plays. I did a lot of regional theater. I was in some, you know, productions that went on to go to Broadway and stuff.
Nice.
I was in the original, you know, workshop cast and things like that. I had a hard time with acting because the subjectiveness, I'd go into an audition room and you'd see 100 girls that look just like you. And my favorite story, which I can tell quickly, is I was, you know, called in to do a Doritos commercial and I Ride Horses, and they needed people who were genuine equestrians who could potentially fall off a horse if they had to and jump a stone wall and whatever. And my agent at the time was like, oh my gosh, you're exactly what they want. You really ride horses. And I walk in and I'm in a room with girls that are like models in high heel boots and designer riding pants. They've never sat on a horse in their life, you know? And I'm like, this is the quintessential Hollywood experience. Like, it doesn't matter if you ride. They tell you they want you to ride a horse. It doesn't matter if you ride a horse. They're just going to go for.
Yes, I can do everything. Yes.
Yeah, yes. And everybody's like, oh, horses, I love them. I've seen one in a field once, you know, and I'm just like, ugh. And that bothered me because it was never about talent. I mean, and that's not to say there's those situations are there. You know, if you're going to be in a mainstream movie, yes, they care that you can act, you know, but when you're working your way up, there's so much that's not about talent. And when it came to music, it's so undeniable. You know, I mean, it's people respect. There's so many different versions of being an artist in music, but if it's authentic and if people can relate to it, that's validation enough, you know? And it may not be my taste or your taste, or it may not be someone else's taste, you know, but there is enough of the pie to go around and there's an audience for everything. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to authenticity and how much you commit yourself to that artistry.
Yeah.
So I found that really noble. You know, and that's why I very quickly, like post-college, just put all my energy into music.
Into the music.
Yeah.
When did the songwriting come about, or was that always part of it?
That
doing
was always
your
part
own,
of it.
Or?
I've always, you know, written songs. I've always written in journals. I've always been very much of an expressive writer. In my first gig right out of college, I sang backup for Christina Aguilera. So that That was a big wake up into the industry, as you know, whatever that means. But it was a bit into the pop world and all of that.
Yeah.
At that time, I was really, I always knew that I had to be. Nobody, unfortunately, the days of just hiring great singers are kind of over. And if you want to be an artist, it's important to have your own voice in your music.
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing songs, you know, for myself in high school, but I think I put my business sense behind it post-college. You know, I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to do this and have my own words in there, you know? So that's where that really got shaped the most, but it was always there. I was always making up songs and writing songs and, you know, playing on the piano, tootling around, you know, I mean, it was never not happening.
Yeah. How much traveling were you doing in those early days right out of college? Was were you performing mainly in Southern California?
Yeah,
or did you
I was from you know, majority in Southern California. The tour with Christina was going to be a national tour and had the it was looking like it could go to a world tour. That didn't happen. She ended up straining some vocal cords that particular season and the tour was cut short. But it opened the doors to a lot of travel and a lot of work and promoting my own stuff from that point forward. But yeah, I've crossed a lot of this country and some of the European countries singing.
Mainly now as solo? Is that
now? I'm recently solo.
What was your project before with David?
I was in a duo called David and Divine, a duo I am still very proud of. My bandmate, an exceptional talent, great guy. You know, as life, we were in a band. I want to say we were together like 6 years ish, and we achieved a lot. We toured all over. We were on a music agency called ICM. We opened for a ton of major artists all over the country and in Europe. And, you know, it was great. Life just likes to, you know, put its finger into the pot every now and again. And my husband and I, you know, we're talking about having a family. My parents had moved to Arizona, and our worlds just kind of shifted. Dave also had a family. And so we were just kind of growing into different chapters of our lives, and it didn't keep me in LA, and it's really hard to do a band in many different states. And it was just time, I think, for both of us to go on a personal journey for a little while, you know? Yeah. So this is my reintroduction back into my solo career. I was a solo artist for a couple years before meeting Dave. Then we were together for, you know, like I said, I think about 6 years, did a lot. We wrote on this, the Grammy nominated album. That's where the Grammy nomination came from.
Nice.
I'm really proud of the work we did. It was time to shift.
Now, when you're traveling, when you're on the road, mm-hmm. Obviously a lot different when you don't have a family, you don't have a little one at home.
Right.
What were some of the...
It's fun. Let me start with that. It's really fun.
I've done some road gigs in my life as a journalist.
Yeah.
A lot of late night team buses and road trips in the middle of nowhere and backstage at gigs and
random green rooms, random places to stay.
Some green room. We were talking off mic about the green room up in Flag.
Yeah.
And the green room at the green room is in fact a closet on the stage.
Yeah.
You actually have to go on the stage to get
to the green room.
And it's the if those walls could talk, I don't think I'm old enough to hear the stories that went on in some of those. Without burning any bridges, what are some of the high points, the most glamorous road trips and experiences, and what are some of the wish you could forget experiences on the road?
I have to be 100. Well, I'm trying to think of the wish you could forget. I've already blocked it out. If I wanted to forget it, I've probably just, because that's how you keep going, right? You're like, I'm not going to let this taint my dream. I have to be honest. We had nothing but pretty much great gigs. Obviously, in that regard, we were very lucky. There were definitely bigger ones than others. We opened for Adam Lambert in front of like 40,000 people in Philadelphia. The streets were lined with people. I mean, it was amazing. That was a high. That was a really big high. You know, but then we played, I don't know, maybe a 2,000-seat theater opening for the Four Tops, but that was a different high because it was legendary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I knew every song. Talk about the oldies stations in Motown. Yeah. And, I mean, that was an honor, you know? So, and those guys in their late 70s, killing it.
Yeah.
And now half the band is, you know, the sons of the original singers who have passed away. So, you know, you're just looking at history in the face and looking at where music has come because of artists like that. I opened for Boyz II Men. That was a highlight.
Oh, wow.
Down in Oceanside, and the venue was on the beach pretty much. And they killed it. You know, they've been around to almost 30 years, you know, and you're just like, they sound amazing. And they
fall into that black hole of
right. That's like that 90s kind of R&B boy band. Yeah. But again, I was like, you know, 10 or something, and I was like, oh my gosh. You know, so I'm sitting there geeking out on side stage, being like, and they'd like point to me and sing. And I was like, oh my God. You know, freaking out because my 10-year-old self was like, oh my God, Motown, Philly, Boyz II Men. You know, and it was just a lot of fun. So we've had a lot of highs. Not so many. Oh, I know the one. It just came back to me. We were playing. It was the first time we got booked in New York City, and there was a place, I should leave it nameless. And the person who owned it was a relatively well-known musician artist, so we will remain nameless. Yeah. And my parents flew to New York because I was like, I'm playing New York City. This place was a dump. Like my parents, so much of a dump, literally the sewage was leaking behind the stage from the bathroom.
Oh, nice.
So I'm in my like heels, like crossing over a stream of like fresh sewage to go out to this little tiny stage
little tiny stage. And I think my parents were even like, oh man, here in our mind, we were all going, New York City.
The glamour of
show
business.
Yeah. And they got there and I got there and we were like, this is a dump. my dad's like, you're a long way from Carnegie Hall, kid. Yeah. You know, but the crossing over raw sewage to get to stage was probably the lowest point, but it was still really fun. We had a good time, yeah. But, yeah, it's been a great ride. You know, there are a lot of fun moments and memories.
I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I've been out here since 2004. Mm-hmm. And I used to do a lot of music photography then and worked for a couple of magazines out there. And I've done, you know, the Candlestick Park stadium shows.
And then is it Bimbo's that was there?
No, Bimbo's yeah. Slim's, which was, mm-hmm. I don't know if it still is, but it was owned by, now I'm blanking on his name. Lido Shuffle.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Anyway. I know who you mean. It's on my tongue, too.
Some big venues out there, which as a photographer, it's nice to do because the light shows and all that.
Yeah.
As an audience member, as a fan, I will always take
a smaller
the little bar shows where
me too
where, because you're right there, you could watch the faces of
well
the
I feel like those shows are the ones that, you know, when you hear those legendary stories a la like you know, oh, that one time in 75 when I saw so-and-so get on the stage at the Whiskey or the Roxy or wherever, or in San Francisco at Bimbo's. Yeah. I have one story like that. I went to San Francisco State for a couple of years, I lived there, and I was at a Safeway, which was not far from the Bimbo's, and I ran into Macy Gray because she had played a show, and I was shopping for some groceries, and she was picking up some... What are those mother's cookies? You know, they look like animal cookies. They're like pink and white, you know,
with the little
dots
on
them. Yeah. And she was like, hey, girl, I love those cookies. And I was like, and I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, I'm talking to Macy Gray. And she had played a show like that night, and everybody was so excited because it was a small enough venue.
Yeah.
You know, and Macy Gray had kind of like a splashier, probably in that same void area of your black hole. But she had a splasher. She was huge
in
Europe.
Black holes
she
in
was
my
huge
head.
In Europe. I heard her in London before I ever heard her in the States, and you know, and then she finally made it over here, and she had a little splash, and then kind of fell from label to label to label. But that was one of those moments where everybody was like, "Oh my gosh, you can catch her on this cool stage and get the vibe and see her up close and feel her energy," opposed to being like, "Here's 30,000 people." You know, watch them on the big screen.
There was a spot in Oakland. It may still be there. I don't know. It was a legendary blues club, and I want to say they were operating in the 50s, probably before. You would hear those kind of stories in the 70s when guys would drop in Eli's Mile High Club.
Yeah.
And when it was a bar, 21 and over, but I remember the first time I was ever in there, I was probably 16 or 17. I had
good
a driver's
job.
License.
You're like, back I got then, myself in there.
Back then, when I was 16, people thought I was 25. When I was 25, people thought I was 40. I'm finally catching up to where I am. I don't know.
That's good. People are going to be like, he lived forever. he had to have been 180 by the time he died because he was 40 at 16, you know.
But I went in because I had heard all these stories about Eli's Mile High Club.
Right.
And I go in and there's just this rocking R&B band playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, in between the little patter in between songs, they're talking about who they used to play with, you know, on keyboards. He used to play with Ray Charles. Da, da, da.
Right, right.
And they took a little break, and this was late. This is probably 12:30 at night.
Yeah.
And they took a little break, and you just heard a little rumble going through the place.
Right.
And then everybody's eyes go to the front door, and James Brown was playing at the Superstar
in
San Carlos.
Oh, gosh.
And
he just came rolling through.
He comes walking in, sits at the bar. And I'm maybe 15 feet away from him.
Yeah.
16-year-old white kid sitting the only white
like,
person in the whole bar.
Hey, Jay. Hey,
but
Mr. Brown.
It was amazing.
I would take that any day over.
He was in there for 5 minutes, turned around, walked out.
Right.
Didn't take the stage, nothing. But it lended some legitimacy to what these guys were saying, you know, in my pinhead.
Right.
And it was just an experience.
But see, you have that moment. And that's what I love about venues like that. That's why I would love to create a venue like that here.
But I used to do photography work for a gal who lived in Vallejo, or either Vallejo or Vacaville, right up there, like East and North Bay, north of Berkeley.
Yeah.
And she did, she was in development for, I want to say A&M at the time. But she would scout out little bar bands and find talent and then do demo tapes in her. Yeah. She had a studio she worked at in San Francisco and one in her home. And she would hire me to do pictures and stuff for them, either studio stuff or performance pictures. Anytime they started to get traction, they would get handed off to the other folks. She was regional talent.
She was kind of like a middle person. Like,
and loved what she did. Yeah. She got to hang out and see people at their infancy.
I love that.
And I got a chance to do a lot of photography for her. And anytime we would travel together, she'd jump in my car. We'd go to shoots. I had my cassettes in Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah.
John Lee Hooker was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And she just kept saying, I don't know how you listen to this stuff. I don't know how you listen to this stuff.
She's like, I can't do it.
This is my dad's music. You listen to this? And I said, I love it. I love it. And John Lee Hooker was one I always had going. And she told me one day, she goes, you really like that guy, don't you? I go, yeah. He goes, John Lee owned a club in San Francisco. And the legend was you'd pop in any given night.
And
there's a chance he would play.
There, right, well, yeah.
That
he would be
there.
Yeah.
And I worked for about a year and a half, and one day I'm at her house dropping off a bunch of proof sheets. And she goes, come on, let's go for a walk. Got to talk to you. So we're talking, and we're walking down the street. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here. She goes, I want you to meet my friend. She goes and knocks on a door, on the house door. Nobody comes to the door, but the garage door opens up. John Lee Hooker's house.
Oh,
when he was
my.
Living in Vacaville.
Were you like, I don't know what to do right now.
She walks in, she goes, this guy won't stop playing your music. Can you talk to him for 5 minutes?
Because then maybe I'll get one car ride out of him without listening to you.
Which we did. We sat and talked, and I didn't have a camera with me. This is long before cell phones were invented. And I had a nice little 10 minutes.
But what an amazing experience and memory. And I know that there are certain venues I've played that they don't even allow the cameras because they want to keep that tradition alive.
Well, locally, right here, downtown on Whiskey Row, and I'm going to butcher the year, but I want to say it was late 70s, maybe early 80s, probably late 70s, over at Matt's.
Yeah.
And there's a picture on the wall in there, and you walk in there at any given time, Matt's Saloon on Whiskey Row, and you'll find at least one person who claims to be there the day that Bruce Springsteen walked in, jumped on stage, and played for a couple hours.
I would have died. I love Bruce Springsteen.
So those kind of stories are legendary in small clubs, and that's why I love.
I'm right there with you.
Those little spots.
I'm right there with you. That's why I'm determined to make. I'm determined. My poor husband. I'm giving him gray hairs. I'm like, I don't know what it's going to take, but we are opening a venue here. I'm opening a legendary venue here. It will happen. It will happen in the next 5 years. And he's like, oh my god, five? Can we make it like 10 years? I'm all, no, maybe 2 years. It's happening.
Well, let's talk about performances a little more. What you got? I don't want to. We've gone a long time here and haven't mentioned why we're sitting here. June 3rd. 7 p.m. at the Prescott Elks Theater. PrescottElksTheater.com was where you can find information about
Candace Devine.
What do you got going?
I am doing, so this is my first splash in Prescott. It's funny, for as much as I've toured, this is one city I've never played. So I don't expect anybody to know who the heck I am, but I'm here and I'm playing. I am an avid horsewoman. My parents live in Chino. We have horses. I know that there's an equestrian center that is coming up. It's the Chino Valley Equestrian Park. It's a nonprofit. It needs funding. I'm passionate about the idea of that coming into town and having a place for kids and citizens and families to go play, be with their horses, be with their dogs. So I decided to get my feet wet, jump back up on stage. Most of the proceeds will go to that cause to help develop that equestrian center for our town. And because most of you don't know who the heck I am, I'll be singing a lot of covers so that it's songs that the audience knows. And then I'll be mixing in some of my originals.
Nice.
I'll be also singing the song that I wrote that got the Grammy nomination called I'll Be Your Home, which Mindy Hebert cut on her Wild Heart record with Keb Moe, who's a famous jazz legend.
Keb Moe.
So he actually sang on that song with Mindy Hebert, who's, you know, if you're not a jazz person, which it's a small community, she's great. She's a sax player, also has a killer voice. She's been on The Tonight Show and all kinds of things all over the place. She's played with everybody. But
Yeah, so I'll be singing that song and a couple of my other originals, but then I'm going to be singing songs through the decades, so some of my favorite selections from 50s, 60s, 70s. Yeah. I love a lot of 70s music, so there might be some more of those than the others, but I've got a great band with me, and yeah, we're just going to kill it.
Who is that? Let us know who's going to be with you.
Yeah, friends of mine from San Diego, they have their own band called the King Taylor Project. They are fabulous musicians and singers in their own right. They are dear friends of mine. I've had the good fortune of playing with musicians from here to New York, Nashville, London, all over the place. And a lot of my regular musicians who play with me are on a world tour right now. So these dear friends of mine, you know, raised their hand and said, we would absolutely love to come back you and be your band. They've played in Prescott before. They played, it's now sold, but it was the Addictions yes. Bar. And they've also played at El Gato Azul recently. So they have family that lives here and they tour through here and they're super, uber, super, duper, duper, uber talented.
Nice.
I said uber. I meant uber. But
I like uber better.
Uber talented. And so they're going to be sitting in with me. They'll probably do a tune as well so everybody can hear them as well. And we're just going to have a whole lot of fun on June 3rd.
And that benefit again is going to the
CVEquestrianPark.com
is their website. It's kind of under construction now. They've launched it, but it's pending some new updates and things. But again, June 3rd, 7 p.m. at the Elks Theater, a nice mix of standards,
decades,
some covers, some of your originals.
Some 70s singer-songwriter. I definitely throwing in a Queen song because I just can't not. And I have all these beautiful voices with me. So we're going to put a little rock and roll in there, a little bit of standards, a little country. I'm going to sing a Dolly Parton song and a Patsy Cline song. And
well, it goes to what you were saying earlier about your influences. It's so widely... there's so many influences. Yeah.
Stories
going in.
And melodies. Those are my.
When you talk about some of the old, you know, the old R&B and the old Motown stuff, to be able to blend all that together, they all influence each other. I mean,
they
go
do.
Back to
they
the old country.
Over.
Johnny Cash, who you
absolutely.
Mentioned. There's a guy locally, a friend of the show. He's been on several times, a good friend of mine, Danny Romero, who plays basically country music,
yeah,
but his influences range from Johnny Cash, who he does a lot of covers of, his own original stuff, Suicidal Tendencies, throw some of that stuff in.
But I tell you what, a lot of those songs, if you just break them down and put them on an acoustic guitar, they're still fabulous.
Well, yeah, I mean, Johnny Cash was cowboy punk, basically, back when.
Exactly. There's well, and that was my earlier reference. Ray Charles was, I mean, he was a soul singer who said, I love country music.
Yeah.
I'm from the South. I love country music. I want to sing country music. It turned into what we now know as, you know, R&B or soul music. But it was the same concept. He goes, in country music, they tell good stories and they have beautiful melodies and it hits the heartstrings.
Yeah.
But he was a soul singer. So, I mean, it crosses over in those, you know, same ways that I think are it all bleeds into one another.
And what you're saying about different venues and when you know, bookers or venue owners are filling their club... Talent, artistry comes first.
Yes, it
then
should.
What's the genre?
Right.
It doesn't really matter. You go in, you're going to see somebody you may not be familiar with. You might not be familiar with their style or their genre.
But you may go, wow.
Yeah, you get turned on
to
new
into that.
Stuff.
That moved me. I'm into it, yeah.
Well, we need more of that here.
That's
so open
what
up,
I'm
tell worried. DJ, bust it out, open up the club.
I have been. That poor man's getting gray hairs because I mean, every day he's like new gray hair because you won't leave me alone about this venue.
He deserves
he could
a couple.
Stand
of, yeah, he could deserve
he looks
a
like he's 12.
Full head of
I know, black
thick
hair.
Black hair.
Jerk.
Great looking guy.
Jerk.
Yeah, I don't like him already. You tell me he can. He's talented, and I'll go punch his face.
I know, and
in.
He's a great guy. Jerk. He's got all these things to offer. Look, believe I married him.
Plug him real quick. Plug him.
My husband is DJ Sheridan of the Bergamini Group, Realty Executive. So if you need a realtor, you want to buy here, you want to sell here, call my husband. Now, he's adorable. He's personable, and if you look closely, he's got some gray hairs.
Now, we will. He was a guest on this show, on the Mile High Show.
The only show that never aired.
I had a ball talking with him. We talked baseball. We talked your career. I didn't make the connection because I didn't connect the name.
He's so sweet. He brags about me. He's like, my
was
wife.
Bragging on you
what
that
a
night.
Guy.
Talking baseball, talking his life in Southern Cal and what brought him out here.
Yeah.
It was a great conversation. We didn't air it for various reasons.
Probably involved some cursing and some slurring. He'd been drinking some beers.
We had a lot of fun. We recorded that over at... you know what? Maybe that'll be our
nip and
intro.
Tuck it.
Maybe that'll be our intro to this. I'll drop in a couple of...
It'll be DJ going, my wife, you gotta hear her. She's great.
had a great time talking. I've bumped into him several times since at basketball
games.
He's
a fun guy.
He's a lot of fun.
He loves basketball. Now, we both do. Yeah. We love sports.
Now, you... been touring, you've done all that, you're starting to do that again. How
I
is
took
that
a year and
with,
a half off because I
baby?
Made a human, you know, I made it, my body brewed a human, and he's the cutest little nugget
little
in the whole
boy?
Wide world,
good,
little
good.
Boy named Bodie, and
Bodie, where'd you get that? What's
you know,
genesis,
people
that?
Ask me that all the time, and there was a bookstore called the Bodie Tree Bookstore, and we had girl names out the ears, and we did not have boy names, and I got an email saying the Bodie Tree Bookstore, which was kind of legendary in Southern California, was closing for a while. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer. I love that bookstore. It's a neat place to just go, you know, check out stuff. It's something to do. And I was like, Bodie. You know, like it was just sitting. And I said to my husband, I'm like, what do you think of the name Bodie? And he kind of went, Bodie. You know, we were just playing with it and we both liked it. There's no deep... meaning
no
it's no family tie.
Now, I will confess.
Now his middle name is named after family, but you know.
I will confess when I saw your name and I saw it on the Equestrian Park benefit posters and things. Until you mentioned, was it your grandfather, Andy?
Great uncle. Yeah.
I assumed that was a stage name.
Yeah, no family name, and it kind of sounds like a cheap stripper name a little bit if we're being honest, a little bit. Maybe
is your middle name Cinnamon?
No, yeah, no, right. And that's why I'm glad it's spelled C-A-N-D-A-C-E, because you can't make it Candy. I tell everybody, I'm like, my voice is too deep to be called Candy. Don't you dare call me Candy. And there's nothing wrong with the name Candy. I just don't wear it well. So Candace Devine, it does sound a little cheap, but you know. But it's memorable.
Yeah. Did your first and only child at this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think just as a side note, my cousin has it worse. She's Debbie Devine. I feel like that's even worse. But maybe it's not. I don't know.
D-E-B-I?
No, it's D-E-B-I-E. But now I think when she needs to be taken seriously, she goes by Deborah. So, yeah. For the same reason. Devine's a hard last name.
It's a business suit name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We have, my wife and I have been married. We just hit, what's the date today? No. A couple weeks ago, hit our 22nd year.
Wow.
And we have a 7-year-old.
That's amazing.
Not planned. Wasn't something we weren't saying, hey, let's start a family 15 years into a marriage.
Right.
But everybody assumes he's my grandson.
Back to you looking. I mean, I think you look great, but but I mean, according to you, that people have always thought you were older than you are.
The perfect face for radio and the perfect voice for print media.
I don't think that's true.
But yeah, it's and my wife, we're exactly 2 years apart. She's 2 years younger than me to the day.
Wow.
Which we didn't find out until we were filling out our marriage application, our marriage license application.
Yeah.
And the lady goes, oh, I think you did this wrong. We both look. We go,
you're
no,
like, no,
that's right. But she looks significantly younger than I do.
Yeah.
And she always has. When we got married, I moved back to the neighborhood where I grew up in. So there was a lot of the same old families.
Yeah.
And I had been gone for 10, 15 years.
Right.
And all the neighbors thought she was my daughter. And then now we have a son, and they think
they're
he's
just
my grand.
Royally confused.
Yeah, so it didn't help. I made her dress up in a little schoolgirl uniform around the neighborhood, but that didn't help much. So
I think I'm in the same position, but in reverse, because my husband just looks so young. You know, I think I'm going to be screwed when I'm like in my 50s, because I'll be looking like Joan Rivers, and he'll still look like he's 25, you know?
Well, you better work on getting those gray hairs in.
I know. Now, I keep trying to stress him out as much as possible.
Do you know a lot of the folks with the Equestrian Park?
I do.
You,
Danielle Feller, president.
Talk to her.
Yes.
About her Hollywood times.
Oh, I know all about it. Yeah.
I had her on I do some radio for local stations.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I had
she's
her
got
on.
Great stories to tell. I think she did, you know, costuming and stuff for like 30 years, yeah.
And did a lot in working with horses as well on sets and things.
Mm-hmm.
We just need another venue out here.
I'm working on it.
Get some more gray hairs on that kid. So that
he's got to sell more houses. So please contact DJ Sheridan.
Well, how much commercial work do they do?
I'm not the one. I have no idea. But my answer would be they need to do more because I want to open a venue.
Get a nice venue. So again, June 3rd, 7 p.m.
Please
Elks
come.
Theater.
It's going to be a fun night. We are going to have a lot of fun, and it's going to a good cause for the community, and I'm super excited about it. And I'm probably going to pop up here and there at some open mics in the next couple weeks leading up
work
to it so some people can get used to hearing about me and get an idea of what I sound like. I kind of sound like a big Adele, kind of, ish.
I was going through and looking at some YouTube clips. There was one, and I'm sorry I'm blanking on the name. Should have wrote it down. It was with David and Divine.
Yeah.
You had it. I believe it was posted on your Facebook page.
A song for you? Is it the Leon Russell cover?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great song. I'll probably be singing that actually at the Elks.
Oh, nice.
It's a beautiful song. One of my favorite ever written. Leon Russell was a monster songwriter. And
I'll put on in the show notes for this episode, I'm going to put some links to obviously your social media, your web and that.
Thank you.
I'll put on some YouTube clips as well. And I'll also link in the cvequestrianpark.com. Again, we kind of...
And the best place, just so you... I hate to interrupt you, is find us on Facebook. It's the Chino Valley Equestrian Park on Facebook. And it's under the whole name, Chino Valley Equestrian Park. And that's... It stays up to date. They're working on the website currently, so that stays up to date in real time, along with the Instagram.
Along with the...
And Twitter.
Grand opening, which is scheduled for June 24th.
Correct.
There's an event page for that. I'll share all those.
Yeah.
One of the things, because, again, what I do here in town for work-wise is covering a lot of the local meetings and stuff, so I've gotten a chance to see some of the previews of the Chino Valley Equestrian Park, and
it's
have a link,
because
I can't remember the guy's name that designed it.
Sergio.
Yeah. He's designed like facilities in Australia.
All over the world.
In Asia.
He's done like
Europe,
300 or 400 of them. He's amazing.
One of the local ones people may know, there's one in Scottsdale that gets a lot of visitors. This is going to be a premier facility out here.
That's the plan,
Not just for the equine arts, however you want to term it. There's going to be a lot of different events out there.
It is sized to be a multi-use property. Yeah. So, I know that they're hoping to have dog shows and,
outdoor
swap meets and concerts and all kinds
festivals.
Of stuff. Yes.
You're going to see you on stage there at some point.
I'm open to it. That's why I'm so passionate about it because, my family, we're out here in Chino. We love it out here. And it's gonna be, a place for everyone to have an epicenter. It's gonna be a really neat outdoorsy lifestyle. It'll encourage the arts, and it's gonna encourage family time, community time, and I would love to see it grow and thrive and blossom.
Well, follow you on Candace Divine Music on Facebook.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to hit? Anything else you want to get out there?
No, I'm really active on my Instagram and my Facebook. My website has probably not been touched in a while. So you can go there and you'll see, accolades and videos and whatever. But I, follow me on Facebook or Instagram and Twitter and you'll stay right in touch with what I'm doing and where I'm going and where I'm playing and what's happening. You'll see cute pictures of my baby and my sweet, cute, handsome husband. So, we live a very down-home family lifestyle, and I share all that because I love my family.
So you planning on having this area, the Quad Cities area, home for a while?
Yeah. I don't see us leaving any. Nice. There's no reason to. I love it here. I absolutely love it here. My parents came out here, eight years ago or so, and we'd come out and visit on holidays and in-betweens and just come out for long weekends. And when we, like I said earlier, when we decided to make a human, I was like, where's a good place to raise a person, And I love what Northern Arizona had to offer, specifically Chino and Prescott. It's just a great lifestyle. I love that, the kids are outside. I love that there's places to go and do things and culture and fun stuff
and
history.
Places to grab a burger and sit under an umbrella.
Yeah, and hang out. Yeah, so we're really happy here. We love it. I was just gone in Nashville this last week, and I was really excited to come home.
Yeah.
It feels like home. So,
like I said, we've been out here since 2004 from Northern California. It took me a few years to not think of myself as a Californian.
Yeah.
And now...
So funny, I let that go real quick.
I couldn't. It was just...
It's an innate, yeah.
And
I
then
understand.
Then the probably the fourth year or so that we were out here, we did another. We were going back and forth pretty regular.
Yeah,
me or is it?
I think it's you, but that's okay.
then we're coming over that Altamont Pass in the Bay Area, and I could not wait
to get back.
To get back to
it's
my
funny
home
how it
here.
Does that, yeah. right? It yeah. gets under your skin, and the clean air out here. That's a big one for me. Like when I land in Los Angeles or other big cities, yeah. and I just am like, and then I come home and I'm like, I can breathe. This is amazing. It has really become our home. We love it here. And as a fifth generation native Californian, it was a weird thing to realize I'm having a native born Arizonan yeah. son. But I'm really proud of it, and I'm really excited, and I'm really thrilled he's going to grow up and call this home. I laugh all the time because I came from a big city and couldn't wait to move to someplace smaller and more intimate and more community-based. And I said, my son's going to grow up here and have all this. And he's going to be like, get me to, you know, Times Square, or yeah. get me to Hong Kong or some big city.
Take him to that club you played in New York, and he can
jump over sewage.
And then he'll want to come back home right
be
away.
Be like, yeah, maybe I want to be back out on the ranch in the clean air. But
well,
yeah.
again, Candace Devine Music on Facebook, Candace Devine on Twitter and Instagram, and CandaceDevine.com. And June 3rd at 7 p.m.
Thank
Nelks
you,
Theater.
Matt, for having me here.
Thank you so much for making the time to come out to Pepper Jack's in Chino Valley. Thanks to the folks out here for letting us take up space.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Sounds good.
All right, it's all right. You're so good to me. It's all right. Well, the suits and the towels abuse their powers, and a man looks the other way. And the same fat cat that came and took my job is gonna take my home away. It's alright, alright, it's alright. You're so good to me, it's alright. My song. But when you kiss me and tell me you miss me, anything that could be wrong.